I think that's all I need to say. I think they understand what I'm saying. Sam, have at it.
All right. Well, maybe I should start out on a lighthearted note here for starters, because there are a lot of serious things that we'll be discussing as we go along here. As a lot of you know, Trish and I do Missouri Liberty Radio, and that's the service that everybody logs into on Sunday mornings to get the sermons from Ted and Charlie. And we've been doing it since about 2005, 2006, and it came out of the idea that we knew the media was going, the media's been going south for a long time, but, you know, I made up my mind. I said, if I'm going to turn on a radio, I want something to come out of it that's intelligent. And, but Trish and I've been at this for a long, long time. We've been gradually waking up to what was going on ever since the early 90s. And, early 90s for me, but late 90s, she started listening on shortwave. She's actually one that really finished waking me up, because she started listening around on shortwave and hearing the plans that they had to put us under UN control in this country. And one thing led to another, and of course, now we're doing what we're doing. But on a lighter note, one of the things that is so funny when it comes to people is how they perceive blindness. More people take more offense to blind jokes than we do that make them.
Than you do that make them make
yes.
the blind jokes.
Yeah, it's really hilarious, because sometimes I'll crack something when we'll walk into one of the restaurants in town, and a friend of ours that runs a local eatery there, she told him, what do you guys complain about? They're the ones with the problem, not you. But we've had some humorous things happen with it. We were living over in St. Louis. Maybe the best way to start is the time that Trish and I accidentally fell into Wendy's, in Wendy's restaurant. We were over on, now for those of you who don't live in St. Louis, the streets won't sound familiar, but those who do, you know, would be quite familiar. But there's a stretch of area over there now. It's probably bad now that neighborhoods have gotten way downhill over there since we lived over there. But Trish and I would go out and we'd go running around town, and there was like a little strip mall over there with a Radio Shack and a Kmart back then. Wow, Kmart. Nobody ever talks about Kmarts anymore. But we'd joke with them in there like they were having they'd have these things called red tag sales, you know, sidewalk sales down there or whatever. And the first thing I'd always ask them when I went in the door was how much they wanted for the tags.
The sidewalks.
Then the sidewalks. Then it graduated into the sidewalks. I'd ask them how much they wanted for the sidewalks. And we do this all the time. We go around, there'd be yard sales. I'd say, hey, how much of your yard can I buy? So we do stuff like that. Well, what leads into this issue with Wendy's was we came out of this Radio Shack and we were running around downtown, and I was trying to find the door to get into the Wendy's restaurant
back
then.
Back door, Wendy's.
Back then, we're a lot more particular about what we eat now compared to back in those days. You know, we'd go in them places And so anyway, we're looking around, and I find this door, and I said, well, this must be it. I opened the door, and I heard people in there. It sounded like people were eating and having a good time, and I smelled food. So I said, well, this is Wendy's. So Trish and I started in, and what I didn't know was in front of me, about 3 feet, was three steps.
Oh, no.
So Trish and I are walking just like it's regular level floor, you see. And all of a sudden, we start tripping down these steps because we didn't know they were there. And there was tables on either, these steps kind of stuck out into the room a little bit. And so there were people at these tables on either side of the steps reaching out, catching us as we were coming down. And we were laughing silly. These people thought, they took it way more serious than we did. We were laughing like a bunch of loons, you know, as it was all happening.
Well, it is funny.
And to us, it was funny. You know, because who else falls into a restaurant? But we did. We had a good time. We got in there. We ate. We certainly went out a different door than we came in. But what was so crazy about the whole thing was the entryway coming in didn't have steps. It was only the back way, which I was kind of surprised they even had that door open, but they did. But we used to do that all the time. We'd go down, you know, you go down in an unfamiliar block and you don't know what things are and you can't read the signs, so you just start trying doors. And sometimes you'd wind up going into sometimes you'd have doors that go off into parts of the buildings that you weren't supposed to go into. And it was like, okay, why are these doors unlocked then? You know, like you go in and sometimes you go into rooms and it'd be like furnace rooms and boiler rooms, mm-hmm. and sometimes steps going down into basements and different things like that. So it was quite an interesting experience trying to find. But it's always interesting when we come into a business for the first time. And this is the way Trish and I learned Owensville. We just open up the door and walk into a business and say, who are you? They tell us what they were, and okay, now we know who you are. And then we move on down the block and say, who are you? We just keep this up until we got, you know, to where we start, you know, learning what most of the establishments are. And everybody was nice, you know, they'd tell us what they did. And then I turned it into an adventure for the radio station. I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, why don't I take a recorder with me and go downtown, interview some of these people and kind of give them a little bit of free publicity. And at the same time, we learned where all the stuff was. And so it kind of worked out good. So anyway, that's a little bit about some of the craziness that we've run into in our travels. It's been an interesting experience. But like I say, I mean, it's, you have to take, and I guess it's easy to say when you're a blind person from birth. When you're a blind person from birth, you've never had sight to miss. So there's nothing to go back to because you never had it to go back to. You can't compare it to anything because you never had it. And so to us, it's just a way of living all the time. But I think what the problem is with most sighted people, why they take offense to some of the blind jokes and crazy comments that we make, is because they're always looking at it from their standpoint if they went blind. And you have to remember that, you know, nothing. And I've worked with people that have lost their sight after, you know, like sometimes in late teens, early adulthood, and whatever. And the thing I always remind them, I said, it's not the end of the world. I said, basically what you had happen to you is you were traveling down the road at 60 miles an hour. Take it like you're traveling in a car at 60 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you crashed into a brick wall. Because now what you got to do is you got to back up. And I know it's kind of a crude analogy because you don't always survive when you're riding in a car and you crash into a brick wall, right? But if you think about it in the analogy that I'm using, the reason that I say that is because what you have to do is you have to back up and start over. In other words, there's a lot of things that you're normally used to doing by sight that now you have to learn to do by touch. So it's just a question of backing up and starting over. Everything's a contact sport once you lose your sight. The only problem is, like I tell people all the time, that you would have trouble getting used to is, as a blind person, you don't want us driving because if you have insurance would never cover what happened to you. So that's the only thing that is a problem. Now, I mean, we do very well. We have a lot of people that help us out around town, even a lot of the business owners down there. We've got a couple we know that run the local shoe store there that's always there if we need something, and they've always been very, very nice. And they said, if you need something, call us. And, you know, they've always been very, very nice. And then we have a friend of ours that runs a local restaurant there in town. She's always been very good about things. But most of the time, we're pretty independent. I mean, we just get out and go. Another one of the funny things we run into there is that the sidewalks in Owensville are bad enough that Trish and I walk in the street.
Oh, no.
And it's funny because we will be walking down the street and somebody will stop us and go, sir, do you know you're in the road? And I go, yeah. And they'll go, are you lost? Well, we could debate that issue, but actually, no, I'm not. Depends on what you mean by lost, you know. But the funny comment that I always tell them is that the roads are safer than the sidewalks, and they don't know what to do with that. And the reason that is because you're walking along on the sidewalks, and sometimes some of the sidewalks, the tree roots will have them buckled up about 6 inches out of the ground. And I've literally split open the end of shoes going down the street there in Owensville, because we move a pretty fast rate when we get going. And all of a sudden, I'll run into the edge of the sidewalk that's out of the ground, and I've literally just tore the toes right out of shoes. And I said, I'm not doing this. And what got us traveling in the street was, Trish and I woke up one morning, there was snow on the ground. It was about 2 or 3 inches. And it was a day, everybody was at work, you know, different people that we knew was at work. And I said, you know, I'm not bugging people, you know, because people got lives, you know. And I said, somehow we're going to get uptown. And so I turned to Trish, I asked her, I said, are you game to follow the tire tracks uptown? Because I hadn't even thought of that. It was one of those, you know, moments just kind of came into my brain. I thought, the only way we're going to make this work is we're going to have to go out there where the cars have gone through and just follow the tracks up the street. So she got her boots on, and I got my shoes on, and we went on out. We followed the tire tracks uptown. We eventually got down and did the business we needed to do and got back home. It was slower, but we got it done. And I got to where I like traveling so much on the road down there, I just kept doing it. And so that's how we wound up forgetting about the sidewalks there in town and walking in the road. So that's a little bit about us and some of our experiences that we've been through. Now, the one thing I wanted to get into is, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is a lot of the stuff at hand and needs of getting together, and we were talking about ecclesia last night, and where this ties in with Missouri Liberty Radio's, the stuff that we're doing here and the stuff that we do on Missouri Liberty Radio, particularly We Are Ted and We Are Charlie, is exactly why I started that station. I think you guys all know as well as I do that even today's supposed Christian radio stations will probably never give people like us the time of day. Yeah. Not going to do it. Because first of all, they're 501c3. In fact, I'm going against the grain with Missouri Liberty Radio because, see, normally the way a Christian station, if they want to honor the state when they put a station on the air, what they have to do is they have to first become 501c3. You can't get a license for a Christian station unless you're totally commercial without being 501c3. It all goes hand in hand. And most people, I think you guys don't know, don't you, how the 501c3 thing came into existence? Yeah. Most of you guys know that? Yeah. It was Lyndon Johnson back in 1954 who helped conceive the legislation that gave us 501c3 in order to muzzle the preachers back at that time. Because he didn't like the fact that they were criticizing him as senator back then. And so back in 1954 was how 501c3 was conceived. Now the churches were very slow to catch on to it because, as usual, you know, things take a while in coming. But then along came Ronald Reagan. And suddenly what most Christians thought was, our guy's in power now. Now we can do it. And so everybody started climbing on board on 501c3 like crazy. And now, of course, after Ronald Reagan, of course, now we see what happened. And Clinton came along, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's a back and forth between the Republicans and the Democrats. And you got the establishment Christians who think that the Republicans, that God was a card-carrying Republican. And then you've got the Democrats who go after the Christians. They go after anybody. And of course, it's gotten progressively worse, you know, as the Communist Party USA came in more and more and more. I mean, it's been a gradual process, but the point I'm making is I'm kind of giving you a progression of how we got to where we are. Then along came George Bush Jr., who was a Republican. What happens? Faith-based initiatives. This is where you had guys like Jerry Falwell and various others who they just wanted to have a seat at the table, you know, with all these politicians and everything. Well, they got their seat at the table, and now look where it's going. I don't know if you guys heard, and I can't remember what the name of it is. Did you hear the other day that the Southern Baptist Association now is changing their name to comply with Black Lives Matter?
Yep, saw that.
Yep. That is an example of what happens when you're dealing with the average church in America today. And it's so funny because I get people that'll ask us ever so often, what church do you go to? And I tell them, well, I go to the Church of Missouri Liberty Radio because we have all the preaching that we need over there. I don't need to go to any 501c3 church. And sometimes you get people say, well, you should go to a church somewhere. I said, why? I wouldn't go to a quack doctor. So why would I go to a church that is quackery? And you know, usually I don't know how to deal with that because you're criticizing their church that they go to, you see. And so, but anyway, this all ties into exactly what Charlie was talking about last night with John MacArthur, because see, this is exactly the problem there. He's 501c3, he's a corporation, and somehow he doesn't quite get the fact that he's climbed into bed with the state means that he's got to do the state's bidding. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be interesting to see how many people ever gradually wake up to this. I know Greg Dixon eventually did over at Indianapolis Baptist Temple, and I still don't know the full story as to why that fell apart the way it did, but I do know one of the problems with that was that he started feeling conviction over the fact that he was paying, that he was taking taxes, you know, away from his employees, in other words, acting as a representative of the state, when in reality he should have nothing to do with the state. So he was trying to get out from under 501c3, and whatever happened, then we had a supposed Christian attorney general, John Ashcroft, who was behind the taking of that church. That was the one that I found quite fascinating when that whole thing went down. And so it's quite obvious that any kind of worshiping of the Lord is going to have to be done totally outside the establishment. And it's a shame more people are not figuring this out.
I was a point man at the Indianapolis Baptist Temple Association there, and I don't know if y'all know or not, Charlie used to teach there, so Charlie knows the inside story. And I was a point man doing the seizure, and Greg Dixon, he went against, we went there to stand. The call was an American to stand.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That wasn't what happened. We got there with our, we had four or five A-teams there who spiked. Training with Colonel Bo Greitz was there with us, and I mean, he was our leader. And he just turned his back. Everything we did, he you know, destroyed. Well, okay, if that's a game you want to play, we're out of here. We had a meeting in the upper room, and they actually had an upper room there. And we just all went around one at a time and set our peace, and we decided to leave because it was his church and he wasn't there to stay.
Yeah.
And so we left.
Well, it was kind of interesting because I know I covered it from afar, and it was very, very hard to cover because all I was getting was the news information that was trickling out from there. But I covered it even back then. And, of course, even back then I was learning as I went. In fact, I interviewed one gal that was supposed to be an attorney of theirs, I guess. I don't know if you guys know of a gal by the name of Barbara Cate. No. She claimed to be representing the church there. And I've always wondered exactly what happened with that. But I think the thing that really astonished me out of the whole thing more than anything else is, you know, when I was up in Kansas City, when Trish and I first started getting active and doing what we're doing now, this is before I started realizing that the only difference between a Republican and a Democrat is one, there's two trains to hell. One is going at 80 miles an hour and the other one's going 100. You have to pick which one you want if you're on that, on those two trains. And Ashcroft was at a meeting that we were attending, and
the Republican Central Committee of North
Carolina. Yep, and I felt a bad feeling about him from the first time I met him. Here's a guy who claimed to be a Christian and yet was instrumental in helping pull off that stuff that happened over there with Greg Dixon. And of course, you know, I'm learning more and more of the story as I go along. But anyway, the point being is that, you know, as we all know, you can't play in their sandbox. Well, that's why I refuse to play in the sandbox either. In fact, I think part of the reason that we have been blessed as well as we have is because of the type of operation that we run with Missouri Liberty Radio and the kind of, the kind of broadcast that we carry, particularly with the sermons on Sunday, you know, with Charlie and with Ted and everything. And it's really been a blessing, and God has blessed us that we've been on all this time, and more and more people are starting to tune in, and which I'm grateful for.
Sam, hang on one second.
Yeah.
So you operate a radio station which is under the control of the FCC. Now, tell them how you got your license.
I did.
Oh, okay.
Yay! I just, in fact, I'll tell you how Missouri Liberty Radio actually started. It just started out originally as Liberty Radio. And then there were a number of other Liberty Radios across the country that were starting to pop up doing the same thing I was doing. And I figured, well, somehow we have to differentiate because all of us can't be the same thing. So I decided to call it Missouri Liberty Radio. But actually how it started out, we were having a picnic of various patriots and people up in Kansas City.
Jim and Betty Chapel, they held picnics.
Yeah, at their home, at their farm. And while I was there, I expressed the idea of starting up a liberty-oriented radio station. At the time, I didn't know where it was going to go or whatever, but I knew I was sick and tired of the mainstream. And a lady from Versailles, Missouri, who was a dentist there, handed the check to us for $1,200 to get the first transmitter. Now, we were not on the internet at that time. We were just a local venture. And so we started up there briefly before we moved down to Owensville. We've been in Owensville ever since. And never had any trouble. The only time that we ever had any trouble during the time we were there, and I told some of you about this last night, was in 2006 and 2007, there was a move afoot here in the state of Missouri to start metering people's private wells on their farms. And the state was going around putting water meters on people's wells. Well, those of you that know Jeff Thomas is the producer of the Derry Brownfield show when Derry was alive. Derry was the first one that reported on it. Trish and I got wind of it. We went and we had 500 flyers generated to stand up against this.
We'd put them in different places.
We'd put them different places, and then other people started generating more flyers off of ours.
They said, hey, can we copy your flyer?
Yep.
And we said, well, I don't know, why not? It's just words.
Yep. So by the time it was over with, we had flyers going as far north here in Missouri as Cameron. I mean, it was amazing. Once it was electrifying the way that whole thing took off. Well, we had a meeting at the Lions Club in Owensville. Holds just over 300 people. We had people standing in the kitchen, people standing in the aisles, people just grabbing chairs wherever they could find them, and 200 more, plus more, wanting into the building that were standing outside around the block. Well, the two representatives that were instrumental in this metering of private wells here in the state of Missouri, one was from our area and the other one was from Branson. And what it turned out they were going to do was they were going to take the proceeds from everybody's monies that they were paying on their own wells that belonged to them. They were going to take that money and use it to build the infrastructure of Branson because they had all them theaters going in down there. So it was a tax, basically, to fund Branson. Which made me mad because it was like my attitude was, well, first of all, I didn't ask you guys in Branson to jump into all this tourism stuff. You didn't ask me, I didn't ask you. So why are you putting meters on people's private wells for? You know, it's wells that some of them had probably had paid, they were paid, you know, they paid money to have them dug. Others, the wells came with the property, but nevertheless, they're on their property, and you're going to put a meter. And what really astonished me about, there were some people around town where we live that actually did it, actually let the state come in and do it. I said, you guys are nuts. I said, there's no way I'd allow somebody to come in and put a meter on my well. Well, anyway, make a long story short, we had these two representatives that were there, a guy by the name of Dennis Wood and another guy from our area by the name of Charlie Schlottick. And these two guys got up there and they were justifying this stuff, you know, as typical politicians do when they get themselves in trouble. Well, let us just say that some of the comments that came from the farmers are not repeatable here. And by the time it was...
You could say hogwash.
Yeah, hogwash. We'll just put it that way and just leave it at that. So by the time it was done, these two guys took off back to Jefferson City, and they overturned that legislation as fast as their little backsides could get up there. Oh, yeah, it was already in effect. It's rare when you can actually get a piece of legislation defeated the way we did that. That whole thing was just absolutely amazing. But that's why today there are no meters on people's wells today because of that big meeting we had in Owensville back in 2006.
Yeah.
Well, no good deed goes unpunished because while we were there, Derry Brownfield was there and he spoke up and he was promoting Missouri Liberty Radio and telling people where they could tune in and hear it and all this kind of stuff. Well, sitting in the audience over there was a guy from radio station KTUI out of Sullivan. He didn't like it because supposedly in his mind they served Owensville. Well, actually they don't because... You have to, if you're sitting outside on our front steps outside of our house, you can barely hear them. You have to really strain to hear them. They're that weak in Owensville. So this guy got aggravated over that. And when he found out we were carrying the Derry Brownfield show there in Owensville, he contacted Jeff Thomas, who's Derry's producer. And I get a call from Jeff, and Jeff said, hey, he said, I want you to know, he said, there's an affiliate of ours that's upset over you carrying the Derry Brownfield show.
Well, they thought they had exclusive rights.
And I guess, so Jeff told him, he said, well, first of all, you don't have exclusive rights to the show. Well, of course, the way that a licensed radio station deals with competition is they sick the FCC boys after.
Misery Death Life Company.
Yes, they do. And I always say, picture the FCC guys as a bunch of government dogs, because that's what they really are. I mean... So anyway, they come down, and this guy comes to the door, and of course he has to have a police officer with him because he's too cowardly to confront me on his own.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm here to talk to you about your radio station. I said, yeah. And he said, there's a problem with your radio station. I said, well, I said, tell me what it is. I said, am I interfering with anybody? And he goes, no. He said, you're running a radio station without a license. And I said, Well, how does that make it a problem? I said, how does the license make the signal any better? And so he, you know, blabbered at me about it and told me, you know, about the potential penalties and all this stuff for it and all this kind of nonsense. And so he just basically kind of chastised me a little bit, which, you know, I just told him, I said, well, first of all, I said, as far as I know, we're still under state of emergency under Title 47 here in the United States. We have been in a state of emergency since at least 1933, actually a little earlier than that, but 1933 was when the Trading with the Enemy Act was signed into law, which, by the way, makes all the American people the enemy of the government. They just don't know they are. And
in this state.
Yep. And so, you know, of course, he's not going to pay attention to the thing you say. So anyway, when he left, I just waited about a week or so, turned it back on, and we've been back on ever since. Never had a visit from him since. But of course, you know, you had the guys over at KTUI. Eventually they said, well, if we ever hear your signal over here in Sullivan, we're calling the FCC. And I said, well, trust me, don't worry about it. You're not going to hear our signal over here. Why would I want to, you know? Takes a lot more on my electric bill to run that much power. And so we've been serving Owensville. And what's really interesting is, here's the really fascinating part of it. KTUI out of Sullivan is run by the phone company that serves Owensville. It's run by a company called Fidelity Communications, which is a private phone company. The radio station in Sullivan can't stand us. The phone guys that work for Fidelity love us. So isn't that fascinating? In fact, we had a guy come over one day. We had lost internet. It was kind of fascinating the way this worked. We had lost internet. There was a problem with our internet service, and one of the guys came over that got to know us quite well. And he told them, he said, over at the head end, you know, when they were trying to get it back up and running, it was like 8 o'clock one night, and we were still without internet. He said, I'm not leaving here until they have internet. And, you know, because that's how we were mainly running the radio station. Now, he got us back online, and that was one interesting thing. The other interesting thing that happened to us was the same guy that fixed our internet the first time came back one day and was doing some other work for us because we'd had some other internet problems, and he got to looking around. He said, who wired this house for telephone service and internet? And I said, well, I did. And he says, well, how'd you know which colors go where? And I said, well, are they right? He goes, yeah. And I said, well, let me put it to you this way. I said, I can't tell you what color they are, but I can guarantee you this. I said, I can guarantee you that I can tie them into the DMARC box on the outside of the building at one end and get a dial tone at the other end. I said, I can't tell you what colors are going through. I can just tell you I'm sending it through a pair of wires. And he said, well, you got them right. And so apparently we eventually became talk of the phone company down there because I had wired that house accidentally the correct way. And so we've had some interesting times with that phone company, and some, you know, it depends on what branch of it you're dealing with. But anyway, since then, we move forward to COVID, or as I commonly call it, corona psychosis. And our listenership went through the roof. That's the only silver lining out of corona psychosis, is that more and more people now are starting to wake up, at least out where we are, that something is horribly wrong. The fact that the governor successfully shut down the whole state over an enemy that you cannot see.
Over something that didn't even exist, I don't think.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it exists.
And the interesting part of this whole deal is that Trish and I smelled a rat with it right away because we've been studying the whole history of governments and their and the way governments subdue populations and stuff for years. You know, everything from the eugenics movement to you name it, we've been studying it. So I knew right away the red flags that came up when they did this, what they call a lockdown. And you know, I don't know about you guys, but that term lockdown, I hate it with a passion because it implies that some politician can lock us down like he uses a key in a lock. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't like that terminology. I am not one to be locked down. And I just said right on the air, I said, I don't care who knows it. I said, if I want to get out of this house, I'm getting out of this house, whether you like it or whether you don't. And we did. I mean, there wasn't much open. All the businesses come to it. They pretty much all closed down except for restaurants that were delivering and doing carryout. But we got out, and we took some nice long walks during the time that COVID thing was going on, and no mask. And so we just basically told them, said, we want to get out of the house. We're not going to buy into this lockdown nonsense. And you know what was interesting here, just about a week and a half ago before we came down here, we were walking back home, and a guy stopped us, one of the police officers there in town, totally agreed with us. He was totally on board with where we were going, and like us, never wore a mask anywhere. He didn't do any masks. And he, and we've known him for quite a while. I mean, when I used to be on the Owensville City Council, and that's where I first met him. And I'll tell you, they're not common, real common, I don't suppose. But there are, once in a while, you run into a few police officers that are liberty-loving people. They do exist. You just have to find them. And we're fortunate enough we have one there. And he just loves what we're doing with Missouri Liberty Radio. He said he never tunes away from it. And we woke him up to a lot of stuff. In fact, Trish and I were instrumental. Owensville did not participate in the militarization that a lot of police departments have across the country. That came out of a program called the 1033 program. And what most people don't know about that program is that not only does it militarize your police department, they get Humvees, they get tanks, they get, you know, grenades and all kinds of other happy stuff from the war machine. But what the 1033 program dictates is that in order to have all that gear, you have to use it at least once a year. At least once a year. So that means that even if you live in Podunk Timbuktu and there's no need for this equipment, if you've got it, you have to think of a way to use it. So then you get these departments, they'll use it on the most minor things, you know, like just, you know, like going to somebody just because of a domestic dispute or something, and they'll go and they'll drive a big Humvee over there or whatever. And that's the dirty little secret behind the 1033 program. And so this guy who's on our police department, his name is Scott Griffith. Scott was instrumental in talking to our marshal in town about not buying that equipment. He said, we don't need it. And he said, we shouldn't be buying it.
Well, there's strings attached to that equipment.
Yep. And it was thanks to what we were doing through Missouri Liberty Radio that we at least got our local government not to, you know, our local police not to buy into it. Now, Owensville has a different police department than most. We don't have a police department that actually is with a chief that's appointed by the city. We have a marshal.
Oh, they're trying like anything to get rid of it.
Oh, they want an appointed chief so bad over there they can taste it. But I keep telling them no. A marshal is somebody who's elected by the people. When you go and, you know, when people vote in the local elections, the marshal is elected much like the sheriff is elected. And so a marshal is totally different. He's kind of more almost like a sheriff in a way. That can be bad too if the people, you know, if you get a good old boys network and you get certain people, you know, making all the votes and stuff, you know, they can keep voting their good old boy in. But an appointed chief is even worse, because at that point you have a police department that is beholden to the mayor and the city council, and the city council can then sit in their ivory tower and make all kinds of fancy rules and regulations, and they send the police out as the grunt men to enforce it. That's where the problem is. And I've told a lot of police officers, I said, if you don't want to be hated by the American people, refuse to do the grunt work of a lot of these cities. You know, that when they send a police officer to your house because of a petty code enforcement issue, there's no victim. It's just something isn't the way the city wants it to be. And so this is the biggest thing I've been trying to get across, and that I think all of us need to work on, and because unfortunately we still live around these people. And we have to try to reach out to if we can find some decent sheriffs and decent marshals or chiefs or whatever, somehow we have to reach out to these people and let them know. Now, I've been fortunate enough that, you know, I've got a good relationship with a lot of the people there, and that's what's helped with the radio station. That's what's helped keep a lot of the riffraff out of our town that we could have wound up with. But it's your police department's handing down the edicts from the city councils. I mean, like, for example, St. Louis right now. Anybody that lives over in the St. Louis area, there's a mask mandate if you're out in St. Louis. And what business does a police officer have enforcing a mask mandate? Absolutely nothing. There's no victim. All there is a perceived victim because the people are scared. There's no victim. And so I'm sounding the alarm and trying to get everybody to understand that unless there's a victim in a crime, unless you can prove that there's a victim, there's no crime. This is like what you were talking about, Charlie, with solar panels we were talking about yesterday. Same kind of thing. There's no victim, but yet you have to go through all this paperwork just to put in solar panels for a person that you're trying to help. And so once again, basically what you got is the cops become the revenue enhancement arm of your city councils and your county governments and your... And that stuff's got to stop. You know, in other words, the police should only be there to... If there's going to be police, they need to deal with real crime and not with the stuff that they're dealing with now. So part of it's the police. It's not just the... In the news, you hear about all the stuff about the defunding the police departments. Isn't it interesting how the city councils that use the police to do their grunt work for them in these big cities are now defunding them? You know, it's like, if I were a police officer, first of all, I wouldn't want to be a police officer doing that kind of work. But if I were a police officer and I ran into that kind of stuff, I'd say, I was good enough when you wanted me to do all your dirty work for you. But now that you guys are in the hot seat, now you're kicking us to the curb. And I think hopefully that's waking up a lot of people in police departments.
Sam,
but anyway,
I want everyone to know that I mean we've known each other since 2007.
Absolutely.
And we've spent hours on the phone. We've spent hours in radio interviews.
Yes.
Sam, I've done hundreds and hundreds of radio talk shows. He is the best interviewer that I've ever done. I mean, it's just fantastic. But I had phone conversations with Sam. I get off the phone. I said, Teresa, there is no way they're blind. There is no way. I said, Sam and Trish are not telling the truth. I was on the phone with him one night. And he was telling me that he was wiring something to do with his uninterrupted power supply and was getting in there with hot wires. And I'm like, you don't do that if you can't see what you're doing. You do not do that. So I know Sam and Trish are not blind. They have to be able to be seeing something. And you listen to, if you've ever listened to his show, all the time they'll say, well, we saw this the other day. Aha! There you go. I knew it. And they talk like they're sighted. They live like they're sighted. They are, in my opinion, the epitome of an overcomer. Having a voice and with the situation that they're in, and running this radio station with no license, which of course to me is just the coolest thing in the world. But not only that, here's something else you guys don't know. Not only are they doing it without a license, but they've got people now, and some blind people all over the country. These little pockets of people who set up their own transmitters and are transmitting, retransmitting, that's the right word, retransmitting,
yeah.
Missouri Liberty Radio to their apartment complexes, to their neighborhoods, doing all without licensing, no licensing, and because of what they're doing, they've started, and so the gospel of the kingdom is being preached all across the country with no licenses. And people setting up their own little deals, like Sam and Trey. Didn't you tell me your signal goes about 10 miles or
so? Yeah, you can get us in neighboring Canaan, Missouri on a car radio if you're driving around, which is about 12 miles out of town. I remember I was with one of our neighbors that lives next door to me, and one day we went out the gun range because I was going to do some practice shooting with him, and so we did, and by the way, his shooting went well.
I'm sure it did.
But I took a portable radio with me because I wanted to keep an eye on what was going on. We're down there at the gun range, which was about 10 miles out of town. I had a little portable radio in my pocket with the antenna all the way down, the FM antenna all the way down, and I was hearing it just like I stand in front of the house. And so it covers, it gets out pretty far. I mean, one night we were riding with somebody coming back and we were coming back through Gerald, Missouri, started picking up on a car radio, and Gerald's about, what, Trish, about, what, 15?
Yeah, 12 or 15 miles.
Miles outside town. And so it gets out pretty good. And but what's interesting about this whole thing is I've always, and as I've further become a person into the Christian faith, you know, because I was not raised as a Christian. I'll tell you that right now. Trish and I, neither one of us were actually raised in the Christian faith per se. We've had interventions along the line that have introduced us to Christianity through, you know, various people that we've been in along the way. In fact, I had a teacher during my latter years of school, and I don't know if he's still alive or not. He'd be way up in years by now, because when Trish and I visited him back in the early 2000s, he was already in his 70s, but his name is Richard Adams, and I'll always be very grateful to Rich. Rich was the kind of person, he was a Christian, he was a believer, and he taught us stuff in the class that nobody would have ever taught in regular classes. I was in an ungraded classroom because I was slow in some subjects, in some academic subjects, particularly in math. And so I was in his class. Well, it turns out that being in Rich's class was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because he taught some of the neatest things. Like, for example, he took our class out to the parking lot behind the school building. And we're all blind. There's 8 of us in this class. We're all blind. And he stood us between 2 parked cars, and he said, "I want you guys to tell me which is the light-colored car and which is the dark-colored car." And I thought, "Oh, come on, Rich, you got to be kidding. You're blind as I am, and why are you wanting us to do this?" So I reached over, I laid my hand on one of the cars, and ouch, it was hot. I mean, it was like 85, 90 degrees that day. We were in this late spring. And I put my hand on the other car, and I noticed it wasn't nearly as hot as the one car on my right. It was really hot, and the one on my left was, you know, lukewarm. And I told him, I said, "Well, Rich," I said, "the only thing I know," I said, "this one's really hot and the other one's lukewarm." And he says, "That's right." He said, "The darker colored car is always going to be the hotter car." And I use that to this day when picking colors for, like, if we ever had to have a house painted or something or whatever, because I learned that from him. The other thing that he taught us was how to tell when water is about to come to a boil on the stove. And I never thought anything about it, you know. And if you ever notice, when you put a pan of water on the stove, you'll hear it start to simmer down near the bottom of the pan. It's not all the way at the surface, but it's at the bottom of the pan. If you pay attention, next time you put a pot of water on the stove and get it boiling, pay attention, you'll notice that just before it comes to a boil, it will start to quiet down. I never thought anything about it until he told us that. And that was another interesting little thing that he did. Probably one of the most bizarre things that he ever did in teaching us was, he has come into class one afternoon and he said, "Class," he said, "sit down." He said, "I want to ask you some questions." I thought, okay. And you always knew when Rich was going to do something like this, he had something up his sleeve. You know, you learn real quick that when he does something out of the ordinary like that, you're about to go down an interesting path. And so we're sitting there and he starts asking us things we like, you know, what kind of food you like, what kind of things you like to do and all this kind of stuff. Well, it turned out that what he was doing during the time he was asking these questions, he was recording everything that we were, our answers, okay? So he'd ask us questions, we'd give the answers, he was recording them. He said, all right, now, he said, I want you guys to get into an assignment. I can't remember what it was, some book assignment or something like that. And he says, I'm going to go across the hall. And he said, I'll be back in about 45 minutes. So we're busy doing whatever it is that he wanted us to do. And he comes back in the room and he says, now, he says, I want you to listen to something. He started playing the tape back. And he had us saying that we didn't like things that we liked. And he had things totally turned around from the way our answers were actually given. And so he stopped the tape after it was over with. We're sitting here like, what? What's going on here? You know, and he stops the tape and he said, now, he said, I did this to show you something. Now keep in mind what I'm going to tell you. This was back in 1972. And he made the statement. He said, there's going to come a day when speech is going to be ones and zeros to the point where they can literally take audio and video and make it look like you did something or said something that you never even said. Now keep in mind, when he did this experiment with us, he was only using a couple of $30 tape recorders. They were not expensive tape recorders. What he did was he took our answers and he fed them from one tape into another recorder that had a second tape. And he would pause the recorder, the one that was picking up the data from the first tape, and then he'd rewind the other tape around, and then when he would get to the answer he wanted to insert in the wrong spot, then he would release the pause control on the second recorder so that it would insert, you know, where he wanted it inserted on the second tape. Mm-hmm. Now keep in mind, that was pretty amazing that he could pull that off, because, I mean, it sounded real. I mean, he had it literally like we said it. I mean, it was literally, I mean, you could not hear any gaps or anything in the tape or anything. And he said, and he for whatever reason, he felt compelled to tell us that there would come a day where we would get into a situation that we would have this kind of technology where unscrupulous people could literally make us say things we didn't say, be able to take video and make it look like things that we didn't do.
And they're doing that now.
And yet here we are now. Where are we now? I mean, look at where we are now. I mean, you literally, with things like Photoshop on a computer, you can do all kinds of things. You can actually take, I mean, I don't know anything about it, obviously, not being able to see, but I've talked to people who can see. I mean, you can take digital photos and place the head and a face of another person on another body and make it look authentic. I mean, if you've got the right software. So it's amazing the stuff that he knew in his own mind back when he was teaching us all this stuff. And so part of the reason that I'm here today is because of him. Because of the fact now he's not quite where we all are. I mean, back then, I mean, he was attending a regular church. I mean, he was a futurist. I'd love to, if he were still alive, I'd love to try to talk to him about that kind of stuff now, because, you know, the futurist thing has never made sense to me for a long time, which is a whole other issue. That's how Charlie and I got back in touch. But anyway,
you thought,
so
I was a nut first, didn't you? Back in 2007.
In 2007, yeah. Well, see, then I wasn't nearly as far along. It was interesting when you and I got back in touch, and it was weird because we didn't drop out of touch for any particular reason. I had no problem with Charlie. He didn't have any problem with me. It's just he's doing his thing, I was doing my thing, and we just, you know how it goes sometimes. And Charlie actually contacted me over the issue that he was going through with the kangaroo court proceedings over here. And I scheduled him for an interview. And during the course of our conversation, I started talking to him about articles that I had been reading at that time from Gary DeMar over at American Vision. And one of the few things that I did agree with Gary DeMar on was the issue of the prophecy being fulfilled. Now, see, Gary DeMar is more of a preterist, but even so, I mean, you know, he was enough to get me thinking at the time. Well, see, I started going down other roads after Gary DeMar, and I started kind of paying real close attention to what was said in things like Matthew 24, and one thing led to another, and I thought, man, he's right. Well, see, at the time, I hadn't talked to Charlie. Well, then when Charlie and I got back together, here he starts bringing it up. And it's like, wow, you know. And from then on, things started making sense to me. Because I never could make sense out of this 2,000-year gap. Like somehow the world's just going to be allowed to coexist for 2,000 years without any intervention from Christ at all. And then suddenly he's going to come back and he's going to rapture everybody out. And the other thing I always found wrong with the rapture was that I never saw any reference to the term rapture anywhere in the Bible in the passages that I read. And even before I started talking to Charlie, and even before I started reading Gary DeMar, I was like, all right, guys, all you're doing is sounding like space cadets when you push this rapture stuff. You know, in other words, it just never made sense to me. I mean, it was like you guys are watching too much Star Trek or something. And, well, it turned out that was indeed the case. But do you know, still to this day, I've got friends of mine, I can go through Matthew 24 and I can point that out over and over and over again, and somehow they just refuse to get it. And I don't understand that, because it's plain as day who Christ was talking to, and it's plain as day that things were fulfilled back at that time based on the comments of Christ in Matthew 24. I mean, there's other places too, but I mean, Matthew 24 particularly is the one that really stuck out with me. And so as a result, one thing led to another, and of course that's when I start talking to Charlie over his cases with, you know, his case with the kangaroo court system here, and then one thing led to another, and eventually I asked Charlie, I said, hey, you want to do a sermon here on the radio station? And of course he agreed to do it. He's been recording them, and what most people don't know that's really fascinating about the whole thing, I literally do nothing other than maintain the equipment at my end to make sure that sermon gets played. Charlie uploads them all. He titles them properly so the system will find them. And Charlie does probably 99.999% of everything needed to make sure those sermons are playing on Sunday morning. We just make sure the transmitter's on the air and the computers are running correctly. And Charlie is the one guy who does it all on his end, does it successfully, it all works out. You hear it every Sunday morning. He gets it in there, gets it played, and the system plays it back. And also Charlie is the webmaster of Missouri Liberty Radio too. So when there's something that gets in over my head, which with screen reading software is quite frequent, when you start getting beyond basic text, that's where I run into trouble. So started working together with it, and it's become a project that has been working out really well. Charlie's always been there when I need to do something that's quite complicated, and so he is a big reason why you guys hear the sermons on Missouri Liberty Radio. I mean, of course he is, because he has to speak it, just like Ted has to speak it. And then from once it's spoken, then Charlie is the one that is in charge of making sure that Ted's commentary is posted, and Charlie's work is also posted as well, and that's how you guys hear the sermons on Sunday morning. And we just basically make sure that there's a stream out there for you guys to log into, make sure that everything's on the up and up, all the servers are running correctly, and for the local listeners that it's being transmitted correctly. And let me run this one. I told Charlie this the other day, and I was surprised at this too. We did an interview last Sunday with a gentleman by the name of Rick Combs, who's running for governor here in the state of Missouri. He's running under the Libertarian banner. He is, although he's far from being just, he's not a left-leaning Libertarian by any stretch. He's very, you know, he's very much on the same page in a lot of ways as we all are, I found out. Well, got to talking to Rick Combs after I did the interview with him. I called him up. And of course, keep in mind, he's another one of these that the mainstream media would just as soon go away. Rick, as it turns out, listens to Charlie Stewart and Ted Weiland on Sunday mornings on Missouri Liberty Radio.
Wow. How about that?
So we have a possible candidate for governor that is logging in to the sermons every Sunday morning. He knows right when they're on the air. That's how I know he's a listener, because I get some people, they'll say, well, I listen to so-and-so, and I say, well, what time are they on? Well, I don't know. Well, if you listen, you should know when they're on. Not with Rick. Rick knew right when we aired Ted Weiland. He says, 9 o'clock, Sunday morning. 10 o'clock, Charlie Stewart. I said, you're a listener, no doubt about it. And so what would be interesting out of this whole thing, and like I say, you never know with people, you never know, he seems certainly legit. He certainly is legitimate about listening, or he wouldn't know when the times were. So we know that. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a guy who eventually wound up becoming governor? Because, I mean, let's face it, even though we don't like the state, but unfortunately we have the state, wouldn't it be nice if we had a guy who ran for governor and succeeded becoming the governor of the state of Missouri that was on the same page as a lot of us all are here? And that's what I'm hoping would come out of this. He's going to be showing up in the November elections, and I don't know what's going to happen. Most likely, because the mainstream media and a lot of the major cities won't give him the time of day, most likely he probably won't make it, but if there's some reason that the Lord intervenes, who knows what might happen. You know, because, you know, with Yahweh God, all things are possible. So we'll just have to see what happens. But I've had some real interesting conversations. I will see if I will get a hold of him, Charlie, and I will have him contact you, just so you'll know he's out there and what's going on. So anyway.
Well, Sam, before we move on to prayer.
Sure.
Does anybody have questions for Sam and Trish? I mean, I know that every time I hear them talk, I'm like, how in the world are you? And yet, I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, one thing I was going to say, Charlie, he probably didn't mention it to you, but the best way to deal with hot wires is to lick your fingers.
Yeah.
and then you're pretty good. You know exactly what you got to hold up.
Yeah. Sure. Well, you know, I used to test 9-volt batteries. You know the little 9-volt batteries you get for smoke alarms? That's how I test them. I touch them, my tongue, test them. If they had a bite to them, I knew they were charged.
Right.
If they're not, then I knew they were weak, and I'd throw them away. And
you know, horses, they can smell electricity. Mm-hmm. They can. Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm a coward. I use a meter.
Yeah. Well, you know, remember that time, Charlie? Another interesting thing that we did. Remember that time, Charlie? I decided just for a change. I got tired of covering the news, and I just decided one night on one of the off-the-cuff shows that I took this little recorder that's sitting here, and Trish and I, we went out on one of our long walks, because a lot of our blind listeners, they enjoy that. They enjoy hearing, you know, things, and, you know, they get a lot out of stuff like that. You know, we go different places around town, you know, kind of get some introduced to our town. Well, I played it back on the air one night. I said, I don't know how this is going to go over, but I said, I'll play this back, and we'll see how it goes over. Charlie was listening that night. And so as I was walking around town, he was following me around on Google Maps. And so I tell him, I say, okay, we're over here. I tell everybody, okay, we're going to sit down over here. We decided to sit down and take a break. So we sat down on a bench over by, I think it was over by one of the banks there or something, First Bank or something like that. And I mentioned this bench somewhere, and got talking to Charlie later, and he says, yeah, he says, I was following you on Google Maps. He said, as you were walking around, he said, you'd point out different things. He said, yep, I'd find them right there on Google Maps. It was quite a fascinating deal. I didn't know how it would go over. I mean, the reason I call my show Off the Cuff is because the saying that I have for that show is, there's a lot on my mind, what's on your mind? And it could be anything. I mean, you never know where I'm going to take that show. Sometimes I'll just take it off the total beaten path where the news and everything else and do something. One year we covered the auto show there in town. You know, had people with antique cars down there. And I took a recorder down there and I started describing, you know, having people describe their cars and stuff for the shut-ins and any blind people that were listening. And we played the auto show back on the radio. So we've done a lot of that stuff too. So anyway, that's enough from me. Hopefully that gives you a little idea of what we're all about. And with that,
any questions?
Anybody else have any questions?
And we'll just proceed. I don't know if I have a question, but I've got I do have a question. I guess I can form a question. I've got a little 5-watt transmitter, and I've been transmitting Patriot Soapbox online in a little town of like less than 1,000 in central of rural New Mexico. So I'm wondering if you, or I guess Jeff, you can't answer for Jeff, would be receptive to any questions I might have if I run into difficulties. I haven't actually been using it for very long. And I've read the regulations, if you will. I read them just to know where I can comply and where I can't, and where I'm not able to comply. I'm ready for any trouble that might come down the road. So anyway, I'm just wondering if maybe there's a way to contact people that are already doing what you're doing and maybe discuss any problems that might come up.
We used 2 years ago, we had a conference call called the Low Power FM conference call. And we quit it because the guy who convened it was a guy out of Idaho by the name of Joe McNeil. And it was running under the understanding that all donations to the Low Power FM organization was going to go to help fund getting these little transmitters out everywhere. And unfortunately, what wound up happening was this gentleman, Joe McNeil, decided to funnel it all into starting up a network instead. And a lot of us, it kind of splintered because, you know, it was, first of all, it wasn't what we agreed to. What the money was supposed to do was to help those people that couldn't afford it get ready-made transmitter packages put together that would have all the necessary equipment, so that all they'd have to do is hook it up, hook an antenna to it. It'd be a complete kit. In other words, hook it up, hook an antenna to it, provide an audio source, and away they'd go. And unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. I would like to see such a movement again. But where it'll ever go, I don't know. Now, one of the things I always tell people that they're certainly welcome to do with me is the original reason I started my stream when I first put the station out on the internet was for the benefit of other low-power FMs. However, it took off, and now we have a lot of listeners too. But having said that, anybody that has a low power FM and wants to retransmit my stream, get a hold of me so I know that you're out there. And I have a real simple email address where you can contact me, and I'll go ahead and give it if anybody's got something to copy so you know what it is. And contact me if you want to pursue this, and it's just simply radio, RADIO, at M-O is in Missouri, libertyradio.us. So that's radio at M-O, Liberty Radio, all lowercase, .us. And contact me at that email address. Also the website, molibertyradio.us, thanks to Charlie, now has a contact link up there where you can contact me through the website. So Charlie put that together, and I thank you very much for that, Charlie. People have used it, and it's worked very well. So you can.
Wasn't that one of the catch points where people would get in trouble with restreaming? As long as you were just talking directly, you would.
No, I'll tell you what was really doing it more than anything else. See, there's no real rhyme or reason. Usually what gets you in trouble, here's the real interesting little secret. As long as you don't interfere with other stations on the dial, that's number one. Number two, as long as you don't carry something that they're already carrying, particularly if you're in their service area. In other words,
and if they really serve an area.
Yeah. Now, sometimes they act like they serve an area when they really don't. Now, the other thing, which is not a problem for us because we all here, we want nothing to do with things that are with foul language and that kind of thing. In fact, I've got one guy that does a show on our station who I've had to sit on a little bit over that issue because I told him, I said, this station is going to be a family-run station. It's going to be a family-oriented station. I said, I told this one friend of ours who's doing a show on there. Now, he's good about it now, but this is back several years ago. I told him, I said, what you don't understand, I said, is that when you're tuning down the radio dial, I said, you need to picture, you got parents who with kids in the car. I said, you're tuning down the radio dial. The radio dial is linear. It's not like the internet where you make a conscious effort to go to a stream and you click on it and bada boom, bada bang, there it is. Excuse me. When you tune down the dial, it's linear. You're scanning across radio stations. The last thing you want is to have kids in the car. You're tuning down a station. All of a sudden you land on a station, there's a bunch of foul language. Now we have that problem even with the licensed stations. And because I am unlicensed, number one, but number two, because I want to be the Liberty message and the messages that we put out should be for all. And as a believer, I don't want to allow that stuff anyway. But secondly, what I'm trying to get across to those people that don't see a problem with it, I'm saying you're narrowing your audience when you can't control your mouth. Excuse me. So part of the problem with that a lot of people get into when they start these stations. In fact, there's a case now, and unfortunately enough, the FCC kind of lost on this one. For us, it was fortunate.
Yeah.
I don't back the individual who was involved in the court case, but it was a case out of Los Angeles. Or no, not Los Angeles, Berkeley, California. Stephen Dunifer versus FCC. Stephen Dunifer was a low-power FM broadcaster, but he didn't do the stuff like we were doing. He'd play a lot of raunchy music and stuff, and anything went on that station out there. They busted him. Well, Steve had the money to take the FCC to court and actually won against the FCC. But basically, the way he won, it just wound up in a stalemate. Judge ruled that the FCC had no right to confiscate his property or come on his property. And it just kind of was left in a state of limbo, and I haven't heard what happened with Dunifer versus FCC since. But the FCC, for the longest time, just pretty much took a hands off. And now, under the Donald Trump administration, he would like to give the FCC more power once again. See, there's that authoritarianism, that supposed conservatism. Donald Trump, his FCC, would like to have more power to go after the low-power FMs. If you're in a big city, you're more likely to have problems than you are in a rural area like we are. I mean, the only reason, if I hadn't threw up that big deal with that water well meeting, we probably would never heard from the FCC even then. Mm-hmm. But we played Jack in the Box and popped our necks out of the hole. And of course, when you do that, you're the lightning rod. So if you kind of get my drift, it still doesn't deter me from doing what I did, but the point of the matter is you are taking a risk because you're standing up against the establishment, and the establishment uses the FCC and whatever other agencies they have to come after you. So,
well, misery loves company.
Misery loves company. You know, these stations don't stop to think about that the low-power FM movement might be freeing them from paying for these exorbitant fees for licenses, because to put on a radio station the legitimate way, Teresa and I knew a guy up in Kansas City, runs a radio station, KCXL. He used to, anyway, a guy by the name of Pete Chartel, paid the FCC for a 500-watt radio station. That's all it was. It wasn't even 1,000 watts. They charged him $2,700 per year just to run that radio station. is a 500 watt AM. That's nuts. There's no reason for that. But that's what they charge. And now, the way the FCC operates is they auction off the radio spectrum, so you never know from 1 minute to the next, you know, what you're going to be paying. Depends on what they decide that frequency is worth. So the fees are all over the map. So they just do an auction to the highest bidder, which presents a danger for us in the sense that somebody could someday bid out the frequency that we're on. I think the only thing that saves me is that there's a station out of Farmington, Missouri that's kind of just real close to us. Not close enough to where I interfere with them, but close enough where a good strong 50 to 100,000 watt FM would not be good for Farmington. So with me operating with like 30, 40 watts in the frequency right up close to Farmington, we're pretty safe there because I don't think they're going to assign anything out there in that area for fear of Farmington being interfered with. We're just low enough power that we don't bother Farmington because we don't get out that far. So anyway, to answer your question, depends on what frequency you park on, and if somebody decides they want that frequency and you happen to be in the way, they could come after you for that. That's always a risk because you're playing, even when you try not to, you're playing in their sandbox when you put a station on the air on frequencies that are licensed by the FCC. So you got to keep that in mind. It's a struggle that, fortunately enough, I haven't had to contend with often, but it's there, and it's something that I have to constantly keep an eye on. So anyway, there you go.
I had envisioned this, you know, the prayer meeting where we would have a lot more time and opportunity for men to pray. And obviously prayer is far more important than breakfast. Okay, but I've had men and women in there since the crack of dawn in there preparing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take away from what they've done. What time is it? Somebody tell
8:25.
Me. 8:25. Okay. Wayne, I'd like to put you on the spot. I'd like you to lead us in prayer. I had envisioned that we would have more time, but boy, I was so fascinated by what Sam and Trish had to say. But Wayne, like I said, we've got 5 minutes until breakfast time. You lead us in prayer. If we have more time after you're finished, if somebody else wants to pray, let's do that. But let's not hold them up from what they prepared for us this morning. Okay.
Father in heaven, Almighty Yahweh, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we thank you for this beautiful day, and we thank you for Sam and Trish. Please enable them and us to manifest your kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. And we pray for this in the precious name of your Son and our Savior, Jesus the Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Anybody else want to lead us in another prayer this morning? Okay, let's go eat.